This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As summer ends and most of us leave our vacations behind and head back to the job, it's easy to envy the kids and daydream about going back to school and getting it right this time. In Florida this year, as many as 33,000 youngsters who did not get the third grade right the first time around will have to do it again. A new policy in the state requires third graders to score higher than a level 1 on the Florida Comprehensive Assessment Test, or the FCAT. If you score at level 1, you're retained, which used to be called flunking. Whatever the terminology, the number of kids repeating a grade is growing as more and more states institute demanding comprehensive tests in adherence to the No Child Left Behind Act. The idea of accountability has replaced what used to be called social promotion, but not without controversy. Last week, the NAACP filed a complaint in federal court asking the U.S. Department of Education to withhold federal funds from Florida because, it says, the FCAT adversely affects African Americans. Later in the program, we'll talk about the dwindling number of men in the classroom, but first, part two in our series on education considers the pros and cons of holding children back or retention. Were you held back? Was your child? Did it help? Did it hurt? Are there better ways to ensure that all of our children read and write at grade level? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and the email address is TOTN@NPR.org. Joining us now from the Florida Department of Education in Tallahassee is the Chancellor of Florida's Public Schools grade K through 12, Jim Warford, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon, Neil.
Tell us, what exactly is the policy of retention for third graders in Florida?
The policy is that children who score a level 1 on the Florida FCAT and or do not fail to measure up using a number of alternative assessments, and I want to point out very clearly that the FCAT is not the sole determinant of retention. Children are given a variety of alternative assessment options, but those children who do not measure up are retained in the third grade.
Why the third grade? Why is that so important?
Well, it is a very critical grade because up through the third grade, children are learning to read and they're building on that skill. From the third grade on, beginning with the fourth grade, it is the text changes and children begin to read to learn. So it's absolutely essential that they have mastered the core skills in reading.
Now, last year, roughly 6,500 third graders were retained. This year, the estimate is as we mentioned, 33,000. That's an increase of over 500%, which is a little shocking.
This is the first year that Florida's accountability system, we've been building toward this for a number of years, and we really have been putting folks on notice. You know, the parents, teachers, principals, school districts, they've known that this was coming for several years in order for us to get prepared. But finally here. And, you know, the one thing that we know for sure is that social promotion in Florida has not worked. And let me, if I may, just use a little medical analogy. It's sort of like social promotion is sort of like letting a child with a serious illness go untreated. And while the treatment may be painful, and many folks have pointed out the how painful this experience can be for children, it's far more dangerous to the child to leave the illness. And this is really, being unable to read is really an academic illness that must be treated and dealt with if the child's going to be successful.
Now, as you've noted, and as we have too, this is not without controversy. The NAACP filed the complaint in federal court. They basically claim that the FCAT is part of a larger systemic discrimination against black students. How does the state respond to that?
Well, what's really interesting here is that all of the data tells us that the populations who have made the greatest gains over the past 5 years in Florida are poor and minority children, African-American children, Hispanic children, poor children. They are the ones who are posting up the greatest gains. And that's what's really exciting and flies in the face of their argument.
Now, what about the idea that retention, keeping a kid back and making them do the third grade again, is just recycling, and that unless the material of that they learn in third grade is different, they're going to have the same kind of problems where they had it last year?
Neil, if I may, you've really put your finger on a key difference, and this is what Florida has done, I think, so well. Let me say this to you very clearly. The whole culture of school has changed. Any teacher, any principal in the state of Florida who's waiting on the results of the FCAT or an alternative assessment at the end of the year to suddenly discover that a child cannot read at grade level just doesn't get it. The purpose that's driving all this is using assessment to target, to identify those children who do not have the skills that they need, and the real answer here is to intervene early and intervene intensively and intervene often, and target the intervention to the particular reading level and academic needs of the child. And that's what's different. All of the studies that have been done on retention prior to this, you know, kind of focused on the old model of simply retaining the child, putting them back through the same grade, same program all over again. Now, a new study coming out of Texas, Dr. Dworkin, is going to show the impact of this new policy, and it clearly demonstrates that with intervention and remediation and tutorials, all the things that we're providing across our state, these children who've been retained are posting significantly higher test scores.
And we're going to be speaking with Professor Dworkin later in the program, but
great.
One thing he has not tested for, because he's not been able to, but that's what a lot of critics say, is that the children, the social effects of being left behind is so bad that the children to whom this happens, even if they do score better, are more likely to drop out of school later.
Well, let me tell you this. Having spent 17 years at high school, I am very personally acquainted with the number, what happens to children who show up in high school unable to read at a ninth grade level. I will tell you that it is far more damaging. The one thing that we know for a fact is that social promotion has not worked for those children. Now, where we want to go with this, you know, I understand, and as a parent, I have three children. I understand. I have, as a former school superintendent, sat across the table with parents who are facing the retention of their child. And what's clear here is that all children, see, that's where we're going in Florida. We believe that all children can learn. All children, poor, Hispanic, minority, all children can learn. And they can reach the same high standards. But they're not going to all learn at the same rate on the same day. So we've got to stop viewing retention as failure, which is why I try not to use the word, and simply understand that more children, particularly children of poverty, particularly children from minority backgrounds, particularly children who speak other languages new to our country, are going to require additional resources and more time. It's clear that in Florida, the data's on our side. Today in Florida, our African American students rank fourth in the nation. 41% of them are reading on grade level today versus 23% of them reading on grade level in 1998. I will tell you that I believe that progress, that pace is even going to be accelerated now that we've put parents, teachers, and school districts on notice. The social promotion is going to stop.
Chancellor Warford, thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Chancellor Jim Warford is the Chancellor for Public Schools, grades K through 12 for the state of Florida, and we spoke with him from his office at the Florida Department of Education in Tallahassee. Now, joining us now from her home in Miami, Florida, is State Senator Frederica Wilson, and it's good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Thank you, Neil.
You vigorously oppose the new policy of holding back third graders who score no higher than level one on the FCAT, and why?
Well, first of all, that particular policy was not put in place as far as the schools were concerned until this year, and no one knew about it. We knew about the 12th grade retention law that is in the law. This is a policy that just came out of nowhere within the last year, and so schools had to try to deal with this. I think that when you begin to hold children back in the third grade, you've got to think all the way back to the first grade, and that's where you teach children how to read. And because Florida does not spend enough in education, we spend 48 per pupil in the whole state, next to Mississippi and New Mexico, but we are fifth in per capita income. And until we get to the place that we can put in place every one of our schools intensive care reading laboratories and math laboratories for first graders who are having trouble, second graders who are having trouble, and third graders who are having trouble. We cannot really retain the children because we have not provided for these children and we have not properly invested in their education to hold them up to a high standard of a high-stakes test. All of the tests that the children take are high-stakes tests. They take another test called the Stanford 9, which is even more difficult than the FCAT.
Yeah, but if you just promote them into fourth grade, and as we heard from the chancellor, in the difference being up until third grade, you're learning how to read. After that, you're reading to learn. If you just promote them, aren't they going to fall further and further back if they can't do the work?
Well, I visited all of the reading camps this summer, and I found very few children who could not read. They just could not pass a high-stakes test. There's a big difference between reading and passing a high-stakes test. Very few of these children. I mean, it's just like a Guinness Book of World Records for you to go from 6,000 to 33,000 in one state. I mean, it's almost as if saying that the children aren't learning anything, and these children can read. They just do not have the appropriate vocabulary to handle the high stakes tests that were put together in Iowa and given to these children in the third grade for the first time. You have to build up a vocabulary base. You have to build up test-taking practices in children. And if they move on to the fourth grade, whatever kind of intensive care you have planned for these third graders that you're going to retain, you can do that in the fourth grade. My say-so is you assess and you teach. You assess and you teach. So whatever you find that these children need remediation in all year long, that's what you teach. But that is not what Florida is doing. They're waiting until the end of the school year. They're testing the children on a foreign test that no one knew about, that no vocabulary skills were built around this test. There's a word on the test called tobogganing. Now, how can ethnic minorities in Miami, Florida, know anything about tobogganing? You want to teach them about the seashore and things that are, you want to test them about the seashore and things that are, familiar to them. They can read. They have textbooks that we have spent millions of dollars for these children, and there is not a teacher in Florida who has and every one of our schools has approximately 30 children who are being retained. And if you did some sort of estimate now and you did an assessment and you called teachers just and asked them how many of those 30 children in your classroom are repeating third grade, that you would agree that their parents would agree, and that your principal would agree, should be retained, they will tell you maybe one or two. And it's wrong. It's wrong to base retention on high-stakes testing. Retention should be based on an agreement by parents, teachers, principals, and assessment materials that they have covered in that grade level. And you start in the first grade. And I can tell you that at least 80% of the third graders that are being retained would do well in fourth grade.
Frederica Wilson, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Frederica Wilson took time out of her Labor Day holiday to join us. She's a Florida state senator, and she was with us from her home in Miami, Florida. We're discussing the pros and cons of social promotion. Coming up next, what the research says about holding kids back, and your calls, 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about holding kids back in school. Does doing the same grade twice lead to better scores or more problems? Our phone number, if you'd like to join the discussion, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now from his home in Houston, Texas, is University of Houston sociology professor Gary Dworkin. He is co-director of the Sociology of Education Research Group at the University of Houston, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Can you tell us about the study that you did that tracked third graders in Texas who were retained or held back? What were your results?
Okay, let me very briefly give you an introduction to it, because ours is not a study of retention or social promotion per se that would look at all ramifications of retention or social promotion. What we wanted to look at was what would happen to kids who had failed the state-mandated criterion reference test, the TOS, or the Texas Assessment of Academic Skills, and were retained in grade versus those who had failed the test and were socially promoted. And we have data on every child in the state of Texas, so it is a statewide study. We were very surprised initially with our findings, because we had always concluded and always thought that retention never works. There is a body of literature that argues that the retained student doesn't produce much of a gain in score, or if the gain does occur, it's not likely to continue, that there is a fading effect, and we did not find that. We worked with a broad array of panels of thousands of kids, using the test score data from 1994 to the most recent analysis of the TOS, year 2002. We had panels of kids who had scored tests every year. We had panels of kids who had some years of scored tests and other years of not having scored tests. And basically, we found the following things. Retention in grade, especially in elementary and middle schools in Texas, was a relatively rare phenomenon. For example, in the third grade cohort, about 1,000 kids had been retained in grade who had failed the test, and 50,000 were socially promoted or were not retained who had failed the test. We also found that those who had failed the test were significantly lower scorers, those who failed and were retained, than those who were socially promoted. However, after retention, the retained students bypassed the socially promoted students and exceeded them by a fairly substantial amount, and continued to outperform them on same grade comparisons all the way now into 10th grade.
Let me just clarify. So the people who did worse on these tests were the ones who were held back or retained.
That's correct. And they outstripped the ones who were promoted and continued to do so.
So from your results, would you say retention does not hurt kids?
Well, we have no good evidence to suggest that retention has those negative effects on achievement.
But that's only one measure, I guess.
Sure, it's only one issue. We didn't look at a lot of other issues because that was not our mandate. We also found that the students who were retained in these panels were not subsequently retained, but about 15% of the socially promoted students were subsequently retained in later grades. And we dropped them from the analysis, since we wanted to do same grade comparisons. And as such, we were comparing the achievement of the retained students versus a diminishing pool of the higher scorers of the socially promoted, and the retained still outdid them.
Okay.
And one last thing. We also looked at delayed retention. and the later one retains, the more negative the impact.
So the later in school that you have to redo a grade, the worse the impact.
Right.
Okay. Let's get a caller, and Adeline joins us from Denver, Colorado. I hope I'm pronouncing your first name correctly.
Yes, you are.
Okay, go ahead.
And I believe that these reports completely lack heart and humanness. To put this on a third-grade child, by the time a child reaches third grade, it should be noticeable to our teachers that that child has been needing help all along.
I concur, but one of the problems that we have in Texas is that the test upon which now the new law takes place is not administered till third grade. What we really believe is that neither retention nor social promotion are optimal solutions. What should be done is that kids with deficiencies should be detected very early and a panoply of resources directed toward those kids so that they would never have the issue of being retained or socially promoted.
Well, to inject a little bit of humor here, in Texas you do everything big.
We're
talking about little children here.
Right.
Who need attention from the time they once go to school. And I say that this stigma, I'll bet you by the time that this child reaches third grade, they have been put in reading groups that are low. And there's a stigma that goes along with that lasts throughout life, I believe.
And that's thank you very much for your call, Adeline. And Professor Dworkin, the one question that a lot of critics raise is their assertion that a lot of kids who are retained eventually drop out. Your study doesn't address that only been going on for 10 years, right?
We have a study which we are doing for TEA that looks at the dropout issue, or at least the non-continuation of enrollment. As you well know or may know, there's some question about the quality of dropout data in the state. But that's still a little premature to talk about.
Okay, let's see if we can get another caller involved. And Corey joins us from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I always had issues with reading, and I was socially promoted. I'm 30 years old now, and I still have a hard time reading. I can read, but my pace itself is so slow that it, to read a book, which takes a friend of mine maybe a couple days, can actually take me up to a month.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you never caught up?
Yeah.
No, I didn't, and I'm still struggling with it now. I've decided, now that I'm 30, I'm back in college, and oh my God, the reading I have to do. I think had I been held back, it would have probably opened my eyes to the reality that life isn't easy, kid. And as far as the dropout is concerned, my mother would have killed me if I was a 19-year-old graduate and thinking about possibly dropping out.
Yes.
She would have just, she would have exercised me from the family.
Well, congratulations on both of you for not going to that option, Corey.
The hardest thing I had with it was the way I was being taught. Sounding out the words and everything, it really didn't help, I still had to slow down to figure out the big words and everything else. Later, I was taught some types of phonics, which made things a little bit easier, but I don't know. It's still an uphill battle for me.
Well, Corey, good luck in school.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Gary Dworkin, I guess we're asking an opinion. I know your study didn't address it directly. But until the day that the resources all of us would like to see directed at kids in first and second and third grades to help with their reading, until that day arrives, given the school systems that we have now and the tests that we have now, and certainly those could be better too, is retention based on test scores a responsible policy?
There's a problem clearly there. Retention needs to be based preferably on a panoply or on a portfolio of indicators, test scores being one of them. Many states are thinking more and more about test scores. Certainly Florida is, and Texas has. We'd prefer a lot more things to enter into the equation. But given that schools are unfortunately people processing institutions that need to process large numbers of kids and sort a large numbers of kids, test scores represent one strategy. We would hope that, and it is true in Texas, that it isn't simply the test score that leads to the decision to retain or to socially promote, that there are conferences between the teacher, the parents, the principal, and other people. In addition, there is summer school mandated for children who are not passing the test, and then opportunities to retake the test before the Retention Act ever occurs or the social promotion occurs.
I'll take that as a maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Gary Dworkin, thanks very much for being with us today.
Sure, my pleasure.
And enjoy the rest of your holiday.
Thank you very much.
Gary Dworkin, professor of sociology at the University of Houston and co-director of the Sociology of Education Research Group. He was with us from his home in Houston. And with us now from her office at the University of Colorado in Boulder is the dean of the School of Education at the University of Colorado, Lori Shepherd. Professor Shepherd is also the author of Flunking Grades, Research and Policies on Retention. And good of you to be with us today.
Yes, thank you.
Same question to you. Is retention based on test scores a good policy?
Well, unlike Dr. Dworkin's study, the weight of evidence argues against retention generally, whether it's based on a test score or not. So I would treat his Texas study as an exception and look at the 50-some studies that have shown a negative effect, including equally large studies, for example, in Chicago that has a similar no social promotion policy.
So you're saying no, that it's not good policy and shouldn't be done.
It's not a good policy for ensuring achievement. Most people believe that critics of retention are critics because of a belief in self-esteem, and I do not think that's an accurate summary of the research. In fact, research shows that it doesn't work to improve achievement.
So the scores that Professor Dworkin was reporting, you think, are anomalous?
I think Texas is unusual. He's written about why it might be unusual because of its accountability system, and he credits additional efforts to improve the performance of low-performing students in Texas as to why it might be different from the general trends in the research literature. I think we also have to consider, though, that in Texas there is quite a bit of evidence of test score inflation, meaning that some of the rising gains in achievement in low-performing students is an inaccurate report. That's not unique to retained students, but when people have studied using the National Assessment of Educational Progress data whether gains on test scores in Texas are credible, they find that the closing the gap indicators have not been confirmed by NAEP, nor have the TOS rising scores that are used in Dworkin's study.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another listener involved. Barbara joins us from Sacramento in California.
Hello, Neil.
Hi.
I was held back for half a year, not because I didn't pass a test or something, but because the LA City Schools converted from a AB school year to everybody starts in September school year. And at that time, my mom decided to hold me back. Now, it did not, frankly, I don't even remember it. It happened in second grade. She reminded me of it. It was like, oh, well, gee, is that the reason why, you know, a year or so later I suddenly began being called a gifted student? And, because it's, to me, it just seemed nothing but beneficial. It didn't bother me, and it seemed to give me a kind of head start. I became more confident in my studies, and from there on, I was always considered a very good student, you know, did well in college, graduated, blah, blah, blah.
What grade level was this?
I think it was second grade.
So pretty early.
Yes, and I do believe earlier the better. However, I do agree with one of your other speakers that the possible inadvisability of basing all of this on a high-stakes test score. You know, in my case, it was my parents and the teacher deciding. And I think the test ought to be brought into it. But one of the questions I have is, I've looked at some of these tests. I mean, I presume you have, too, occasionally seen some of the questions on these tests, and I have to ask myself, who the heck writes these things?
Yeah, it's Senator Wilson said the question for kids in Florida about tobogganing.
Tobogganing, yeah, I know. That's a real big thing in Sacramento, too. You know, we toboggan all over the place, you know. So I think that a lot of attention needs to be given to who writes these tests. You know, some kind of review board that does not consist solely of educational professionals, but perhaps of students, teachers, you know, that can catch some of these bizarre questions. and decide to disinclude them from the test.
Well, Barbara, thanks very much, and I'm glad you overcame your trauma.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Laurie Shepherd, is the connection between test scores and retention, these high-stakes, you know, standardized tests, and retention, is that new?
Actually, it's come in and out of fashion in every one of the last three decades. So there was a minimum competency movement in the 1970s and a basic skills testing movement in the 80s. And each of those times, and again, this is sort of the tail end of the 90s version of test-based standards. So it is something that we have a lot of experience with and a lot of data.
Okay, let's quickly talk with John, who's in his car in Caledonia, Michigan.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Okay.
Good. Retention needs to be based on something, and I suppose if you're going to base it on something, it should be a test. And the tougher the test, the better. The earlier the test, the better. I have two stepchildren who were involved in special ed all through elementary and junior high and high school. One of them is now starting a 3 to 10 year prison sentence. The other one is in alternative ed after being kicked out of the regular school because of acquiring a half of a credit in 10th grade. These kids should have been held back earlier, tried to get them held back earlier, and the school districts just kept wanting to keep them with their peers and not hurt their feelings. And there's a little too much coddling going on with the kids, and we've got to be a little tougher with them, I think.
John, our condolences, and we wish your stepson the best getting through his prison sentence, which will not be easy. We just have a few seconds to get a response from Laurie Shepherd quickly.
I think that your readers might be interested in the comprehensive review done by the National Academy of Sciences, which they can get from the National Academy Press, that shows negative effects on school dropout rates. So the stories are heart-wrenching, but I should just point out that in aggregations of data, they are heart-wrenching on both sides.
Well, thank you, Laurie Shepherd. We appreciate your time today. Laurie Shepherd is Dean of the School of Education at the University of Colorado, the author of Flunking Grades, Research and Policies on Retention.